The following podcast is part of a certified educational activity titled Overcoming Challenges in the Treatment of Pediatric and Adult Patients with Uncontrolled Moderate to Severe Asthma, Comparing Approaches to the Use of Targeted Biologic Therapy with Experts Around the World. Access the entire activity and complete the post-test at peerview.com/AGP860. Downloadable slides and practice aids are also available.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Bacarrier from the Vanderbilt University Medical Center in Nashville, Tennessee. Welcome to this educational activity on overcoming challenges in the treatment of pediatric and adult patients with moderate to severe asthma around the world. Over the course of 4 episodes, we will be discussing our approaches to the assessment of asthma severity, including the appropriate biomarker testing, identifying patient eligibility for biologic therapy, how we use biologic therapy in our pediatric and adult patients with uncontrolled moderate to severe asthma, according to the latest guidelines and clinical evidence. And then finally, we'll cover some questions from our peers about some of our more significant challenges in treating patients with moderate to severe asthma. The complete activity runs about an hour, but you can listen to each episode one at a time or all at once as you prefer. Joining me in these discussions are Dr. Klaus Rabe from the University of Kiel and the Clinic Grossendorf in Grossendorf, Germany, and Dr. Arzu Yorganjolu from the Manisa Celal Bayar University in Turkey. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Thank you very much as well. Also happy to be here from the German side. I'm looking forward to the program.
Wonderful. So let's get started with episode one. So it's important before we begin a discussion around severe and uncontrolled asthma, that we really assure that we're talking about the same thing and work through some terminology. I think it's important first to define what we mean when we say uncontrolled asthma. And that can be represented as asthma with frequent symptoms or frequent flare-ups or exacerbations. And this does not necessarily imply disease severity. Many of these patients can actually have relatively mild asthma, and it could be well controlled on low-dose inhaled corticosteroid if taken regularly, but in the setting of imperfect adherence or appropriate trigger exposure, these patients may still represent uncontrolled disease. There's a category that we often refer to as difficult to treat asthma, and that's asthma that remains uncontrolled despite the prescription of medium to high dose controller or preventer therapy. The challenges here are that it isn't necessarily the asthma that is driving the symptom burden, but really may be related to other contributory factors. These can include an incorrect or inappropriate diagnosis, and asthma isn't present in the first place, or there's a comorbid condition that is complicating the management of asthma. It could be inappropriate or incorrect inhaler technique, such that the appropriate prescribed therapy isn't actually being delivered to the patient and therefore has suboptimal efficacy and control. There could be poor adherence, either intentional or non-intentional, for the many reasons that we've learned over time. Or there could be coexisting comorbid conditions that either directly worsen or masquerade as asthma-like symptoms. And it's essential to differentiate between difficult to treat and severe asthma, because difficult to treat asthma may require strategies other than augmenting asthma controller therapy. Finally, when we talk about severe asthma, we mean asthma that is uncontrolled despite maximal optimized therapy, which is generally reflected as combination therapy with a high-dose inhaled corticosteroid in combination with a long-acting beta agonist, along with optimal treatment of contributory factors. Or you have asthma that worsens when on less than high dose therapy, such that when treatment is missed or intentionally tapered, there is reemergence of asthma symptoms despite that level of therapy. So how common is severe asthma worldwide? And the reality is there's an awful lot of patients in this International Severe Asthma Registry around the world who report uncontrolled disease despite GINA level step 2 therapy on the left, or step 4 therapy on the left, or step 5 therapy on the right. And we can see that these can range from as low as 18% to the vast majority of patients reporting uncontrolled disease around the world, despite optimal high-level therapy. We use guidelines to support and assess asthma severity. Two that are shown here are the Global Initiative for Asthma and the ATS-ERS document on the management of severe asthma, initially released in 2014 and subsequently updated in 2020. These are very good resources for folks to assess both the contributing factors of asthma and the criteria that would help define the presence of severe asthma. So with that as a backdrop, let's open the discussion and work through some clinically actionable and essential elements. So Arzu, what do we think about differences in the definition of uncontrolled, difficult to treat, or severe asthma? Did the strategy that was laid out resonate with your strategy? Do you have adaptations or differences in the way you approach this categorization?
Usually I agree with this categorization. I agree with the GINA assessment of asthma control in many countries. Some countries have modifications, but in my country, we use it. And we sometimes use only ACT, asthma control test. But the symptom control of GINA assessment is good because you are dealing with the daily symptoms, night symptoms, SABA reliever use, and any activity limitation. And also, GINA perfectly defined the risk factors for poor asthma outcomes. Those are very important. So as you have mentioned, we are using these scoring systems. But before going those scoring systems, it's so important that if a patient comes to our clinic uncontrolled with those scoring systems with maximum therapy, you need to evaluate even diagnosis, because I work in a tertiary university clinic where we are a referral center, and those patients who have referred to our center are sometimes not asthma. So we need to deal with the diagnosis first, and we need to deal with the diseases that mimic asthma, like COPD or upper airway obstruction or vocal cord dysfunction. And also there are diseases associated together with asthma. And also we need to deal with triggers. And when you evaluate all of them, and when you have seen the modifiable risk factors, as we always say, like cigarette smoking, obesity, medications, stress, upper airway disease, reflux disease. And when you say that there isn't any other disease mimicking, this is asthma, and this is still uncontrolled with maximum therapy. So it is going to be severe asthma after then.
So Klaus, do you have a sort of a global or international perspective on these definitions of uncontrolled, difficult to treat, severe asthma? Is there a sort of a global perspective that you could help us understand here?
Well, then, I think you gave us a very global perspective. I mean, you mentioned large body of evidence-based guidelines. You mentioned the ATS ERS, you mentioned GINA. I mean, I think this is a very good compromise of different opinions. But I still believe that there are two issues that I think are quite important. You mentioned the inhaled corticosteroid use and the doses and high dose and low dose. I think one thing needs to be mentioned. I think in different parts of the world, doses of inhaled corticosteroids are perceived quite differently, whether they're high or low. So it seems that, for example, in Europe, probably also in Canada, probably in Australia, the inhaled corticosteroid use doses are somewhat higher in terms of, you know, what people regularly use. I mean, I think the US seems to be more conservative in dosing of this. And I think there's a difference in terms of the cutoffs. So we always talk about high dose and low dose, but I think we meet different things by this, in different sort of medical societies. And I will ask you sort of, you know, what the pediatrician thinks about the high dose and the low dose, which may be a completely different story altogether. But the second point that I would like to raise for the discussion is that this idea of control. So we will talk in the program later about underlying inflammation and endotypes. And when we talk in the definitions about control, what we really mean is symptomatic control, lack of symptoms, and probably no exacerbations or reduced exacerbations. But control would imply that you really control the disease. And I'm not sure that this is actually sort of within that definition, because when it was made, we were not talking about endotypic changes like type 2 inflammation. We were talking about lung function, symptoms, and exacerbations. And if you reduce that, you call it controlled. I think this control definition will come under pressure the more we know about the underlying biomarkers, mechanism of inflammation. So I think we have to rethink this. And I think we are just in the process of doing exactly that. But since this was a long answer to a rather short question, I would be really curious how you think about this, Len, because control in a child may be different from a control in the 75-year-old, I would guess. And medications, caregivers are very careful about what drugs and doses you give to a child. How would you look about this?
Yeah, it's an essential part of pediatric asthma care. And I think one of the most relevant points is something you brought up, which is that we really want to minimize children's exposures to medication to whatever extent is possible. So we want to use medications at the lowest dose that accomplishes the goals of therapy. Inhaled corticosteroids are a great example. We will often make attempts to reduce the dose of inhaled corticosteroid, acknowledging that the relatively flat dose response curve of that class of therapy tells us that you don't get increasing benefit from increasing dose in many patients. So if I see that a child is no better off on high dose ICS than they were on medium dose, I go down to medium dose because I don't want to expose them to greater corticosteroid exposure. You know, the diagnosis is a bit more challenging in children, often because spirometry in children is often normal. Bronchodilator response is often less substantial than what we see in adults. The younger the child, the more complex the differential diagnosis is. So I think we want to be confident in our diagnostic approach, in our diagnostic certainty, in the use of medications. You know, children interact with inhalers in unpredictable and inconsistent manner, and in many of them, just optimizing their inhaler technique will lead to greater drug delivery and greater drug effect. So I think it's really essential that we focus on what some call the basics of asthma care. And in children, I think that's really, really critical.
This activity is certified by PVI, Peerview Institute for Medical Education. Remember to download the slides and practice aids. Thank you for listening. Download materials and complete the post-test for instant credit at peerview.com/AGP860. This activity is supported by an educational grant from Sanofi and Regeneron Pharmaceuticals.